On this episode of Eager to Know, three things to focus on when approaching challenges, finding more meaning in what you currently do, and why I viewed Alex as a bit of an exotic variety due to his roots. We all have a creative part of our brain, whether we use it or not, for generating new ideas, problem solving, and just viewing ourselves in this world. I am Ricky McGeckran, an artist living in Chicago, and I am eager to know and share with you all how people of a creative leaning have brought this way of thinking to the forefront and how it has shifted outcomes. Alex Walking is a Chicago-based realtor. When I was considering creating a podcast, I immediately thought of him. His energy and spirit are contagious, and I think he has a lot to say about finding new ways to approach our work and our lives. Hey, Alex. Welcome. How are you today?
Fabulous per the huge. How are you, Rick?
I'm doing great.
Good.
So you are from Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Do you realize that you are the first person I have ever met from Iowa? So I'm from Boston.
Uh-huh.
And in Boston, we have people, like we'll run into people from India.
Oh, sure. East Coasters.
Or I'll work with people that are from Ireland. Mm-hmm. But like someone from Iowa, mm-hmm. that's kind of like, that's a rarity. Yeah. And you would be considered like an exotic.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've never heard the word Iowa and exotic in the same sentence. But so I'm actually from Western Illinois. So in the Quad City area, okay. It's two cities in Iowa, two cities in Illinois. I'm from the Illinois side of the river. I've never actually lived in Iowa. All However, right. whenever I was meeting somebody like, oh, where are you from? I always said Iowa because people can conceptualize Iowa.
Yes.
If you tell them Western Illinois or the Quad Cities, they just look at you with this look of genuine like, confusion and in some cases concern.
Well, I may have had those looks when I first met you.
Everyone does.
So when you grew up in that area,
I did,
and your dad was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
And
25 years.
Okay, and so you grew up. So tell me about. I know that obviously that is what you do now.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about what your dad was doing that you found interesting?
You know, it was a couple of things. And I kind of go back to there was a time when I was 12 years old. And I knew at 12 years old, that's what I was going to do. And what started it was I was homesick one day. And, you know, my grandparents were away. So my dad's like, you're coming with me today. Whether you like want to or not, you're coming with me.
Like on his appointments.
On his appointments. Okay. 'Cause I was homesick and I couldn't stay home by myself. So I got in the car with him. And we'd go around, you know, run a couple errands. But there was one client in particular that he had met with. It was a single mom. She had two daughters. And we looked at this house, and she fell in love with it. And he goes and writes the offer.
Yep.
And I go with him to that. And later that night, after he had presented the offer, she, you know, of course, gets the call that she got the house. And this was a single mom who had... home ownership was never on her radar.
Okay.
And I remember thinking then, well, that was kind of cool. I never actually seen what my dad does.
Right,
I just see his name on signs, but I don't actually know what he does. And then when I heard him make the phone call to her that she had gotten the house, yep. I could hear the excitement. I also heard just the tears coming rolling down her face. And I remember thinking to myself, well, that's actually really cool what he does.
Right.
And from that moment on, like I was just really fascinated by this and how it all worked. And not only that, but her girls were my age.
Okay.
And I remember being really affected by that and how she had girls my age. And like, they're just like me. And that was it. And I just, that connection.
And it also sounds like you saw that what your dad was doing actually... Mm-hmm. had impact on people's
absolutely.
Lives. Obviously, if they absolutely. Were coming to tears well, and kids your age were
absolutely.
Now going to have a home.
Absolutely. And I saw, you know, he wasn't just putting a sign in a yard that had his name on it. I mean, he was moving people around a community and helping them do something that they otherwise thought unachievable that he helped them do that. I was like, that's so cool.
So I know a lot of people that are realtors, you know, from when I lived in Boston, but you definitely looked at your business in a different, refreshing mm-hmm. way.
Well, thank you.
It was less transactional mm-hmm. and it was a lot about the experiences
and how you were going to be changing yeah. people's lives. So can Absolutely. You tell me a little bit about that?
Oh, of course. So for me, it's I look at real estate as introducing people to others who they would not have met without me, such that by doing it, a community is created, built, or improved.
Okay.
And where so the question then becomes every day is, who can I introduce to someone else such that by doing it, this area, this property, this neighborhood, this community will look completely different? Or someone's, even if it's not completely different, how is someone going to fit in there? And I remember, you know, thinking back to when you and I were looking at houses, it's so much fun finding where that person naturally fits.
Okay.
And where that person naturally just where they're going to feel at home.
Okay.
Home is a safe haven. It's a safe place. It's where you feel most yourself. And finding the right property, finding the right neighborhood, finding the right street, it's a matter of, will this person be happy? But also, will this person contribute back to their community in a way, in a positive, impactful way?
Okay.
And just knowing that I had a piece of it, okay. knowing that I got to play that part.
So that's a pretty big idea.
Yeah.
If when you think of yourself as creating
matchmaker.
A community,
yeah.
How long have you had that? Like, when did that become part of the way that you approach your business? Because quite yeah. frankly, that is something that it makes what you do every day.
Yeah.
It makes you want to get up out of bed every
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely.
Because I'm not selling a house, but no. I'm actually creating a community.
Absolutely.
So how did you change your mindset into something like that?
That's a great question. So I'll never forget. I had a client 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, actually. When I was in Iowa, most of my business was historical homes, and because I grew up in an old Victorian, mm-hmm. so I've always had the soft spot for vintage architecture or just really funky stuff.
Yep.
And the cookie cutter, the new construction, none of that interested me. Mm-hmm. I liked the stuff that was off the beaten path. And I had a client 4 years ago who had contacted me on one of my other listings. He was looking for an old mansion mm-hmm. to renovate. He was retiring. He wanted a project. And he was from Chicago. He came down to the Quad Cities. I showed him a couple different properties that I knew of. And he ended up buying this 5,000 square foot mansion for $135,000.
Okay.
Iowa prices. But he knew nothing. I shouldn't say he knew nothing. He was very smart, but he didn't know anybody to help make it happen.
Yep.
And
meaning the construction,
the
part
construction,
of
okay. the financing piece. I mean, okay. I had to wrangle. I had to make this happen.
Okay.
And it all came down to who can I connect him to save the house. And eventually, this house is the crown jewel of the neighborhood.
Okay.
So how do we, knowing the house is going to turn, how is that going to impact the community around it?
Okay. So that's a lot yeah. of weight on
it's
you.
A lot of
to
weight
make sure
on me.
You don't mess that up.
Right. Well, not so many realtors though, Rick, would just sell the house and walk away.
Yeah.
And they don't care. I saw what that neighborhood could be, and I saw what would change it. And what was holding it back was the crown jewel of the neighborhood looked like shit.
Right.
And I don't know if I can say that on the show, but crown jewel of the neighborhood looked like crap. So I connected him with a grant writer because okay. the house was listed on the National Register. She got him, I don't know how many tens of thousands of dollars back in grants.
Okay.
Found him a contractor who did amazing work. Found him a lender who could do construction financing. So it was all these unique situations that are so far out of the ordinary,
right.
but it all worked.
Right.
And a year and a half later, now when I go to that house, the house looks completely different. He did all the right things to it. But what's been fun is watching all of the houses around it, not only sell for more money because now you know, they've got a comp to work with, but people painting, people cleaning right. up their landscaping, people putting on new roofs. There's always a project going on because now people feel good about their
right.
homes.
Right.
And knowing that I had a piece in helping turn that neighborhood, I mean, I think the commission was like $3,500. I didn't care about the money.
Yeah.
I loved knowing that I had a piece in that.
So was it that particular experience that you just described that sort of rewired your brain
that,
as to what you do?
I wouldn't say it rewired my brain, but that was kind of the one that stood out the most to me in terms of why I enjoy so much what I do.
Okay.
There's a couple other properties here and there, smaller scale, but this one was so large scale, that it tested every piece of knowledge I ever had, tested everything I ever knew, tested every connection I had, tested my skills. I mean, it really required a lot of me.
Okay.
And I love that challenge.
Do you think that most people can find something like that in what they do to give more meaning in what they do?
Absolutely. I think it comes from a place of authenticity. And when you are tapped into who you are authentically and what makes you tick and what you are passionate about, find that thing that you enjoy doing, that where the passion is, and follow that in right. whatever you do. Because not everybody's going to run off and be a Broadway actor. Not everyone's yep. going to run off and fulfill their destiny or whatever their dream is. But you can certainly find the extraordinary inside of the everyday ordinary.
Absolutely.
You can totally find that. And I think when you find that, there's more to it than just what meets the eye. And that's kind of what I found in real estate. Is okay. finding that little thing and following it.
How do you think that people can find that? I mean, I have my own ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that for me, like running, stretching, mm-hmm. breathing,
yeah, absolutely.
Things of that nature kind of put me in touch with what is true and meaningful. Mm-hmm. And these ideas will come to me that sort yeah. of lead to those things that are important. Are there yeah. things that you can think that are, that work for you or yeah. you think that might work for others
absolutely.
To find that?
So I think a more methodical way of doing mm-hmm. it is if you think of some really good experience that you had, whether it's a client or a piece of art that you worked on, or a project or an event that you did worked on or attended, think of what your most favorite experience was in your work.
Yes.
And break down every single step of that.
Yeah.
Break it down step by step. Here's what happened. And yep. here's where I found my moments of pure joy.
Yes.
And when you find what it was you enjoyed, that should give you your answer. What was it you enjoyed about that thing or that person or that event? And I think the answer lies in that. It really does.
Yeah, I think that that makes a lot of sense to mm-hmm. me. I remember when years ago, I purchased a nice camera and I started mm-hmm. taking photographs.
Yeah.
And I spent a summer down in Provincetown, Massachusetts, and I had such a wonderful summer. And I captured all of what I thought were really solid photographs. So I decided to do a photo exhibition. And I found a restaurant in Boston. And they allowed me to have my stuff up. And so I had to, I found the space and then I had to select which photos I was going to do, use. I was going to have to like put them on the wall. I was going to frame them, mat them, plan mm-hmm. this event. And I have to tell you, Alex, I felt like when I was doing that, because I had like a normal job mm-hmm. and I was doing this on the side. And I remember thinking, this feels perfect. Like mm-hmm. I feel like this is what I should be
doing.
Doesn't
feel like
work. I didn't paint at this point, but mm-hmm. I will never forget that. I remember mm-hmm. thinking this is just a silly
yeah.
show. And I'm thinking if I could do this, basically take something that was in my brain and then mm-hmm. I created these photographs and then I was able to share it with everyone. And that whole process I found so fulfilling. And ultimately, that's what landed me where I am mm-hmm. as a full-time artist.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't a photographer. This was just something I did on the side. But it was exactly what you said. Like, it just excited me.
Yes.
And it resonated with something inside of me that I wanted to keep doing that.
And I think what you said, too, and you going back to what you said about this event was, it was just kind of a small, simple thing. And I think
it was.
I think where we find our authenticity and find what genuinely drives us tends to be those small, simple things. It is that simple.
Well, it would have to be. Like where else is it gonna happen where yeah. you're not going to stumble into a giant yes. elaborate Broadway show.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's what I want to be doing.
And not only that, but I heard a quote in a seminar I was in a couple of months ago, and it's so cheesy, but it's so true. And the instructor said, work that's fun gets done. I'm like, that's so true.
Yeah.
To your point about, the photography, exhibition, That was fun to do. No one had to ask you to do it. You just did it because you genuinely wanted to and you looked forward to it.
Correct.
And I think when we find that kind of work, that's what it is. Yep. Just go do that. Like I look at real estate and I think to myself, it's kind of a silly, thankless job sometimes, but I love that silly little job. I love it.
Can you give me a couple things for the listeners that they can take away from this as things to think about, challenges in their lives in a new way, or ways to move things forward in a different way?
Yeah. I would say the three things, whenever something comes up in life, to focus internally. And the three things to focus on would be authenticity, curiosity, and commitment. And first thing was focus on curiosity. Mm-hmm. What is the question that's bugging you? How do I solve this problem? How do I find a way to fix this issue? Curiosity. Authenticity begs the question, how do I solve it? Mm-hmm. What's the way I would do it? And also, what's going to be true and true to myself and also keep my integrity?
Yep.
That's the second thing. Commitment would be, what's going to get me to do this every day? Yep. How can I make this process fun? And with those three, I think you'll find your solution, just being committed to finding the answer.
So one of the other things you talked about was that every day or every situation, every relationship is a different challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So to a lot, and you spoke of that as that kind of makes things exciting. To a lot of people, if I told them their job was going to be a new challenge every day, they wouldn't be very happy about it.
No.
A lot of people want the same thing. They want the same challenges that they can master. So tell me about that. Is that part of your personality that you like a new challenge every day? Is that something that you had to train yourself to be excited about or adapt to?
You know, I think it just came to me naturally. I enjoy variety. I cannot sit at a desk and do the same thing every day. It drives me nuts. So to answer your question, yes and no. Sometimes there's a challenge that comes up and you just solve it the same way you solved the last one. And then sometimes there's a brand new challenge that you have to run into. So that you have to just kind of figure out as you go along.
So one of the things that I like to do when I'm encountered with a challenge is to rely on other people who have done it. Either a professional who does it for a living, or someone who has done it many times before, and not rely on me in my own little brain to try to solve something. Because it's a big world, and there's people with probably the exact same combination of challenges and situation that you have.
Absolutely.
So that's definitely something. I have a friend who is going through some difficult situation with like financial situations, and his situation is very specific about, you know, he doesn't have credit. He is trying to make a big purchase, and he's feeling very overwhelmed and he's trying to figure it out. And I told him, you need to reach out to people who do this for a living,
right?
Because it seems like so overwhelming to you, but to them, they do it every day. I used to be a web developer and I had a web development business. And I remember when I would meet with clients who were small businesses, they would feel so overwhelmed about this website that they had to build. And I remember it wasn't a big deal for me because I did it every day.
Exactly.
And I knew the process. I knew exactly the steps of what they had to do, what they didn't have to do. So I always think of that when I have a challenge.
Yeah.
Who does this every day?
Absolutely.
Or who has done this? And I find that to be very helpful.
Yeah. I mean, I still call my dad for stuff. Every once in a while, I'll run into a brick wall with something. I just call him and ask him, like, what would you do? How would you handle this? And you're exactly right. And the other thing, too, is everyone's perception is correct for them. There's no one that, you know, however somebody is seeing a certain situation that you're in, like your friend, for example, he might think that the world is ending. And in his world, his perception is correct. He's not wrong. But it takes someone outside of ourselves to find a way to solve a certain problem or a situation. And sometimes you just have to get creative. Where I run into it a lot, Rick, is on listings that are just special.
Like what do you mean by special?
So I had, you know, again, going back to Historic Mansion I had listed. I had that, oh my God, it I could write a book on that house. So it's this mansion in Davenport, Iowa called the Overview Mansion. And it's this large 12,000 square foot Georgian revival. I mean, it's stunning. It's also this very well-known house. Okay. I mean, it sits, overlooks the, you know, downtown Davenport. I mean, it just sticks out. Everyone knows it.
Davenport, Iowa.
Iowa.
I think I need to go there. I know. That sounds amazing.
Right?
So I
had it listed, and it's like, how do we put this thing on the map?
Okay.
I got an email at like 11 o'clock at night one night from Zillow saying we are doing the second annual Dory Awards. It's a celebration of America's best homes for sale. 20 different categories. And they had one category for best DIY dream home. And I thought, you know, I'm going to send in the overview to this. And I mean, half the house was gutted down to the studs. This house had more issues than a newsstand. I mean, it had all kinds of issues with city code violations and rodents living in that, just everything. So I nominated it. Fast forward, we won. And that was a great way to solve that problem.
So that's interesting. Later, so nominating that, was that mm-hmm. just, was that something that you would normally do?
No.
Or was it something you're like, hey, why not?
I said, hey, and you know what? I found the way I solve most of my problems is you'll never win a war against somebody who has nothing to lose. And that was totally that situation. Like, I got nothing to lose. Might as well try it.
Absolutely.
What's going to happen? I don't win. And when it was nominated, when it won, the calls, the emails, the inquiries just flooded in. And eventually it sold, you know, 2.5 years later. But it was the most amazing experience because along the way I had a bunch of media notoriety. I was in the newspapers. I was in all these other publications, but it connected me to so many other people and it built a network that when I got the listing, you know, I got another similar listing, you know, 2 years, 3 years later. Now I had that network to pull from. I said, hey, I got another one. And so now it's just building that momentum.
And that was all basically based on this mindset of why not?
Why not?
What's the worst that can happen?
What's the worst that could happen?
And you know what the worst that can happen is that you would fail.
Yes.
And people are, because what you just described to me is how I live my life.
Absolutely.
Because I'm like, why not?
Absolutely.
Mean, I'm not afraid of failing.
You got nothing to lose.
But most people, or a lot of people are. A lot of people are afraid of failing.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe I have failed so much that mm-hmm. I am just used to it.
Right.
And I know that in order to be successful, you really need to fail. And I think fear of failure holds a lot of people back.
I don't even think it's so much the fear of failure.
Okay.
I definitely think that's there. In addition to the fear of failure, something I think is worse than the fear of failure is the fear of rejection. Because people
are looking stupid.
They're afraid of looking stupid. Yep. They're afraid of being rejected. Because to be rejected in most people's minds, myself included, a lot of times, to be rejected is to somehow, in most people's minds, it validates the feeling of being unworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you get rejected, people take it as a personal attack.
Yep.
And that's been a hard thing for me to learn the last couple of years, and not even so much business because I get rejected every day.
Yep.
That's just what happens. But when it comes to like dating life and personal life, that is you ask somebody out at the bar that's attractive, they say no, and you, of course, you get your feelings hurt.
Yep.
You know, some people, they don't care. For me, because I don't do it that much, it's like, oh God, okay, well, I'm just going to go be a gidget in the back of the corner of the bar not bother anybody.
Yeah, of course.
And that it totally shows up that way.
And you start to shut down.
And your confidence is, what little confidence you had is gone. And now you lock yourself up and say, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yep.
Not happening. And I think rejection is an illusion.
Okay. What do you mean by that? It's an illusion.
Well, I think it's one of those things that, again, how you perceive it is correct. So if you look at rejection as, a personal attack, well, then it's going to be a personal attack.
Okay.
If you look at rejection as, okay, they're just not interested. Okay. Next. That's what it is. Right. If you look at it as, huh, maybe I shouldn't have been so abrasive. This is a learning moment. That's correct, too. You can choose to be a victim, or you can choose to be a victor. And I think that mindset and how you perceive certain events, especially rejection, can either help or hurt you.
But okay, that makes total sense to me. But how isn't that something that takes a lot of time on this planet to learn? Isn't that learned through experience?
Well,
you can't just tell someone that and they're like, no. Oh, thanks, Alex. That makes sense now.
Well, I think that's one, and you're exactly right. Yeah. Because, you know, what is it? A pound of advice is worth an ounce of example or something like that. And it's so true. I don't necessarily think age or time really matters. I think it's really a matter of speed. How often are you being rejected? Mm. How often are you running into obstacles or brick walls? I think that matters far more than time.
That is a great point, because that ties into how you are dealing with challenges every day and how you are saying, why the heck not all the time, because you're experiencing failure, rejection, or whatever, and you just keep going. Eventually you become comfortable with
it.
And then you can just keep doing it
with
confidence.
It becomes the new norm. Exactly. That was probably the best thing about getting out of my comfort zone in Iowa, because, oh my God, the first 2 years back here, I have run into so many brick walls, and it's challenged everything I thought I knew. It's forced me to reinvent myself. It's forced me to step outside my comfort zone, and it's uncomfortable. But, you know, now it's to the point of, what do I have to lose? There's nothing standing in my way, and by not challenging myself, I'm just going to stay stagnant, not grow.
You are screwed if you don't take risks and you don't challenge yourself. You're screwed. And it's not like, you know, people who are successful, they have gone through a lot of crap. And they just keep going. You know, anytime you hear the story of, particularly, I'm always listening to stories about artists.
Mm-hmm.
And these are artists that are successful, whether they're a painter or they're a musician. And we just always think that it just sort of happened for them.
Right.
And the story is always the same. That they went through really difficult challenges and they kept going.
Well, and they kept pushing
through it. But if you don't do that, you're screwed.
Well, and it's also a method of staying committed to whatever it is that you're working on. So you look at like Thomas Edison, for example. I mean, he tried 10,000 different ways to create the light bulb before it finally worked. So there's a couple things that happen in that story. One, he's committed to solving a problem that genuinely frustrates him.
Yep.
And so that is what wakes him up every morning. He wants to solve that problem, and he will not stop until that problem is solved. The second thing is, it comes from a place of curiosity.
Yes.
And curiosity, I think, is one of the most powerful things you could ever have, because especially with art, with theater. I mean, it's like, well, here's this idea. How do we challenge this? Tell me more about this. I don't know enough about it. Tell me more.
I need to know.
Yes, I need to know. That's why people love People Magazine or Gossip. It's like, oh, I have to know more. It's that curiosity. And the third thing is just commitment. He was committed to that. So you can have an interest and curiosity, but not commit. And you could be committed to something you don't care about.
Yep.
It's when you have both of those together.
All three of those things together.
That's when truly amazing things happen.
I completely agree with you. And I experience this on a micro scale every day when I'm in the studio, because I have this challenge every day of what I'm trying to express via paint.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it really stinks and it's really difficult. It stinks meaning it's hard and it's very challenging. And I know that this painting has potential. I know that something can happen, and I have to just stay with it, and I have to stay committed. And I just have to stay with it, and I have to stay committed, and eventually it works itself out.
Absolutely.
But you just can't quit.
Well, and not only that, but to go off of that, I mean, when you're working on a painting, going back to the Edison example, eventually, as long as you keep trying to fix something or change little things, inspiration will eventually strike. Something is going to change. I think, you know, of how Edison must have felt, or what must have happened, not the 10,000th time, but the 9,999th time.
Yeah.
What did he notice on that second to last light bulb before he finally said, wait, I'm going to change this one thing and it's going to completely work? I would have loved to have known what that looked like.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just a series, and eventually you just keep trying until it breaks through.
And it will.
It will.
And it will. It will. Like, we're so, I think that we are, you know, as humans, I think that we just have so much.
Yeah.
We have so much potential in us to solve all of these things.
Absolutely.
In our personal lives, mm-hmm. in like projects that we're working on. If you mm-hmm. do have the time and you have the energy to focus on it, it's amazing what you really can do.
Well, and what's interesting too about all of that, you know, going back to the example of the old mansion that I sold, that the first one I had mentioned earlier, with that example, I mean, for the first 2 years that I sold real estate, I got licensed in real estate when I was 19 years old, mm-hmm. and I struggled to find business. You know, how is I going to, yeah. where's my business going to come from? Where are clients going to come from? What's my thing? You know, is it an area? Is it a certain niche or a thing? And when I had the Overview Mansion listed, yeah. I noticed it then. And I was like, wow, this is really cool.
Okay.
This neighborhood is kind of an area that's gentrifying. It's changing. No one's really here to be the advocate for this neighborhood. And then when I sold the big mansion that needed all the renovation work done to it, and you know, my client bought something, you know, I connected him to all those people. That's when it clicked. And I
like,
and I
that's to, what you should
that's
be doing.
What I should be doing. I'm yeah. like, that's what it is. I love big old mansions that are run down and finding people to bring them back to life. And that's when I knew this is all connecting now.
Yeah.
I had, you know, I tried being a golf course agent, tried yep. being this, or tried working on first time home buyers, trying to find all these different things. So I was trying other avenues, but it wasn't until I had that one thing that finally came through from a random phone call at 9 o'clock at night. And it was going with the mindset of, sure, why not? I'll help this guy. And that's when I knew that's what I'm supposed to be doing is that. It was a huge breakthrough, and I tripled my business the next year after that.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't go wrong with authenticity mixed with curiosity and a commitment to follow it through. Cannot go wrong with it.
Well, thank you, Alex. This was great. This is the first E2K podcast.
Woo-hoo!
And I think it went pretty well.
Thank
really
you for
pleased.
Having me. Oh, this was so much fun.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Eager to Know. You can find more information about Alex at alexwalking.com. That's Alex, WOLKING.com. You can find additional content related to my discussion with Alex at eagertoknow.com. That's Eager to Know with the number 2. Eager to Know is a weekly podcast.